Cold Witchery is possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors. We'd like to take a moment to recognize our producer-level Patreon supporters.
Heather, Wisdom Queen,
Regina, Jen Rue of Rue and Hyssop,
Little Wren, Christopher,
Akia Branvansienak, Victoria of the Distelfink Sipshafter Verglova,
Jonathan at the Modern Southern Polytheist, Catherine,
Patrick Carroll,
Montine from Book of My Shadows, Sonara at theauburnsky.com,
Wicked Sense Etsy Shop, Moma Sarah at Conjured Cardea,
Jody, Josette,
Amy, Tanner,
Sherry, Athena Beth,
Donald, Jenny Love from Broom, Book, and Candle, and Tarsha.
To show your support and keep the show going, please consider visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery and pledging $1 a month or whatever you can. And as always, thanks to all of our listeners.
Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
In this episode, we're interviewing Lilith Dorsey about her writing, the importance of representation in magical spaces, and where pop culture and magic collide. Stay with us. Hello, and welcome to New World Witchery, February 2019 edition. This time around, we are lucky to have Patheos blogger, author, and magical scholar and instructor Lilith Dorsey with us. Dorsey's Voodoo Universe blog explores not only the magical world of voodoo and other African diasporic traditions, but the ways that magic addresses the needs of marginalized people and, well, everybody. We wanted to have Lilith on particularly in response to an article that she did, reacting to a somewhat troubling article published in the magazine The Atlantic regarding a recent convention of African-American women magical practitioners in Baltimore. But we also wound up having a really great conversation about love magic, rooting traditions in history and culture, being flexible enough to accept popular culture that is embracing magical thought more and more in recent years, all sorts of things. There's been this phenomenon of what's called black girl magic, and that's not necessarily explicitly connected to folk magic in all cases, but sometimes it is, and that has exploded lately, as have explorations of magic and spellcraft in other marginalized and minority communities. Some people may not know just how rich and robust that magical landscape is, though, so Dorsey's voice on the topic will hopefully help others see the diversity and the variety of magical practitioners. We're absolutely thrilled to have her on. We hope that you enjoy this interview as well. We'll link to Dorsey's article and other written works in the show notes, of course, and we highly encourage you to read her materials in conjunction with this episode. Even if you don't, though, we think that this will be eye-opening and informative for you anyway. So, now on to the conversation. Our guest tonight on New World Witchery is Lilith Dorsey. Lilith Dorsey is the author of the Voodoo Universe blog over at the Patheos blogging community. She's also the editor-publisher of Oshun African Magical Quarterly, the filmmaker and director of Bodies of Water, Voodoo Identity and Transformation, the author of Voodoo and Afro-Caribbean Paganism, and a recent book called Love Magic. Invited Lilith on to talk to us about her work in multiple different magical communities, as well as a recent article that she wrote dealing with some controversies that have kind of come up over a convention that was held in Baltimore, and as well as a few other topics as well. We're really, really lucky to have her here because she has a very rich amount of experience and a lot of insight, I think, to offer us on a lot of different aspects of the magical community and contemporary society. So, Lilith, welcome to New World Witchery, and thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor and a pleasure.
We're thrilled to have you. I have been sort of tracking your blog for honestly about a year or so now. I know you've been doing it for a good bit longer than that, but it's always so interesting and so well informed, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. I try.
it's always nice to run across a blog where I'm like, oh, she's citing a source. I know where that comes from.
Right.
So.
Right.
And I guess that's a good place to start. We should maybe look at the background on you, because you're not just an author on magical practices, but you're a member of multiple magical or magically oriented traditions, and you've got a lot of educational background in this area as well. I believe you've got a master's degree from NYU in anthropology.
Yeah, it was a joint major program, which we pretty much make ethnographic documentaries. So it was between cinema studies and anthro. And my undergraduate work was in anthro too. And then I also did 3.5 years in the undergrad NYU film program, but then I never ended up getting my undergrad degree. They told me I could always go back. I'm going to test that one of these days.
Well, good. Well, so how are you? So you're not only doing the sort of cultural anthropology in the filmmaking, which is great, and I see a lot of, for example, Maya Deren kind of in that frame there, but you're dealing with different magical communities, many of which you're a member. And you have, I think, kind of a lot of, to use a filmmaker term, lenses, right? You kind of come at each space, putting on a different lens or a different hat, maybe. And so sometimes you're there as a practitioner, sometimes you're there as sort of an anthropologist. How do you do that? How do you manage all these different sort of lenses that you're using, and how do you interact with these different communities?
It's hard. I mean, I think that it is always, you know, a difficult line to walk, you know, when you're doing these things and knowing that some of it is going to be, you know, wholly sacred and not ever to be seen as something to, you know, report on or, you know, analyze. And some things are going to be, you know, helpful for people. And I think really the best way that I look at it is I've just done it for so long. You know, I had somebody comment on something I posted the other day about, you know, well, maybe some of us just have like intuitive knowledge. And I'm like, I didn't go and get degrees because I didn't have intuitive knowledge. I went and got degrees because I wanted to be more respectful and more responsible and more informed about what it is that I was doing. You know, maybe if I'm filming Haitian voodoo dance or some other kind of, you know, aspect of spirituality in that tradition, it would help me to be more informed, to know what, as you mentioned, you know, Maya Deren did, or Zora Neale Hurston actually mm-hmm. also made ethnographic films, mm-hmm. or even, you know, if I go back and look at Margaret Mead and, mm-hmm. you know, looking at her trance dance footage, you know, like what is it that is accepted and useful to people in this, you know, and I think that was something that informed everything that I do.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because it sounds like you've sort of, you're using the sort of the knowledge that you gain from the formal education as a way to enhance or bolster or explore the spiritual side of things, which I think is that's very much in line with kind of how I do things too. So I appreciate that a lot. How did you get here? You're involved with, as you mentioned, Vodou communities, you're involved with, I think, the Lukumi community as well, other witchcraft communities as well. So what was your trajectory for getting involved with these different paths, and how do you syncretize them in your daily life? What does each do to bolster or balance the others?
Oh, there's so much, you know, but it's not really, I mean, it's a blessing to me to be able to do it. I meet people that say, oh, how can you practice, you know, different traditions because I don't have enough time. But the way I think of it is just sort of, you know, do I have time to get up and feed myself? Then I have time to feed my ancestors. I have time to do other, I have time to light a candle. I have time to take a moment to really connect on every level that I can, you know, and if I don't have time for that, I don't think I should have time for anything really, you know?
Right.
That's the way I think about it, you know. But for me, it just sort of, you know, I was always interested in African spirituality. I came at it from sort of, you know, when I was a teenager, I was a solitary practitioner because, you know, whatever, this was a while ago. And there weren't witches all over the place the way there are now, you know. And a lot of what I was taught from my grandmothers and their grandmothers, you know, was very informal. So as I got older, I started to study more formally. And then I was I mentioned I was a filmmaker, and after that I was I went and got my anthro degree from mm-hmm. University of Rhode Island, and I had a teacher that told me there was no such thing as witchcraft, there was no such thing as magic in the United States today, and I was like, you jerk, you know, for lack of a better term, you privileged, you know, idiot. And I just really wanted to, the only way I could sort of go out and prove this to him was to sort of start doing some of this, you know, scholarly work myself and doing what I could to get that out there. So that's how it really started. You know, I mean, I had always, like I said, done it informally, but, you know, and then I met my priestess Miriam from the Voodoo mm-hmm. Spiritual Temple when my daughter was quite young. I think I've been a member of the temple now for 26 years. Mm-hmm. Counting, she's been there for 28 years, so I got there a couple of years too late, but
but on the almost since the beginning,
other things, you know. So but that really allowed me to have a more active role in the community and not just be a solitary practitioner anymore. And then my circumstances grew that I, you know, had other friends that were practitioners of other African traditional religions. And, you know, I was facing certain situations where I really needed to, I needed their help. You know, I think it's like anything, you know, in some circumstance, I always relate everything to cooking. And in some circumstances, you know what I mean? You might want or need, or your body like is just screaming for Thai food. In another circumstance, it might really want something that was more comfort food for you, be that soul food or Italian food or whatever that is, you know. So on different, it might be Thai food, but but, you know, there's different things that you need for different circumstances and the situations I found myself in. Some of them were really extreme and I had to sort of look in every different way, corner that I could to find solutions.
That's great. You're fast becoming one of my favorite people. The cooking analogy is wonderful. I love that.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's wonderful, and it's wonderful that you're making space for so much in your life. And I really like the idea of you take responsibility for it because you have to. You have to take the time to feed your ancestors. That's part of who you are. I think that's wonderful. You've written a book on love magic, aptly titled Love Magic, 250 spells, or I guess over 250 spells and potions for getting it, keeping it, making it last. What draws you to work in this area of magic that I know some people in some magical communities get really skittish about? You know, do you have any favorite, you know, unexpected love spells or unexpected love spell ingredients?
I do. I have a lot of, you know, it's very, you mentioned the cooking analogy, you know, it's very practical. It's about, you know, how you can make things to increase joy in your life or happiness or things like that, that you really need to feel those things in order to be able to experience love. You know, so I think a lot of people think of the title and even the, you know, subtitle and think it seems like, oh, it's going to be a quickie thing or it's going to be unethical. I get that a lot, you know, and that's not what it is. It's, you know, takes you through self-love. It takes you through love of animals. It takes you through, I always mention this, you know, around the holidays, it takes you through what to do so everybody gets along at the dinner table during the holidays, you know, things like that, because that's all about love. I mean, hopefully you love some of those people you're sitting down to eat with over the holidays, and you really want, you don't want their stresses of life and your stresses of life and the whole, you know, family dynamic to come into it. You just want to be able to enjoy it, you know? So if you put a slice of lemon under your chair, then that'll help do that. It'll help soak up the negativity and the sourness that's in the area and just make everybody sort of have a better time.
Oh, I like that. That's good. And I love it when it's that simple, when it's one of those things that, you know, you're slicing lemons all ready to go in whatever dish you're preparing and you just take a little extra slice and work it under the chair. I like that. It's brilliant.
Sure. Sure. A lot of my things are like that. You know what I mean? Very practical, because I think people need to be practical. You know, obviously there's some certain things that you're going to have to do that's going to be more intense or more things like that. But there are simple things that anybody can do.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I think in my experience, the work I've done in terms of research and the people that we've talked to on the show as well, I find that most people in most magic tends to be that practical, everyday, get it done sort of stuff. And that there's a time and a space for the ritual stuff too. But by and large, a lot of us are out here doing magic because we have needs and we need to meet those needs and we need to meet them yesterday, you know? So.
Sure, definitely.
So one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on was you wrote a remarkable rebuttal on your Patheos blog to this article in The Atlantic by Sigal Samuel. And she had attended the third annual Black Witch Convention in Baltimore and then wrote a piece about young Black women who were leaving Christianity and pursuing African traditional religions. And on the surface, and one of the reasons that I initially shared the article at all, it seems to celebrate sort of a growing embrace of non-patriarchal spirituality among young African-American women and claiming power through magic and ritual. But you saw a number of significant problems with the piece. And I'd love for you to talk about your perspective on Samuel's article and why you feel it's maybe doing a disservice to Black women at the convention and Black women in magical and witchcraft traditions more generally.
Well, I mean, I think to start with, I was upset because they had chosen her to write the article. I would have much preferred a woman of color write the article, preferably a woman of color who also identified as a witch, since she was writing about Black witches. So, and I think that, you know, these are questions we definitely need to start asking right now about these things. I mean... I'm all about self-definition, so let's start there. I mean, I know she can't necessarily do anything about it, but when I started to scratch the surface and realize she's actually, you know, a religion editor for the publication, then it just became, come on, you know, like, can't we do better, please? so let's start there. I mean, I think there were a lot of generalizations, and there's probably as many Black, you know, witch identities as there are individuals who consider themselves a Black witch. And I think that that's not really how she presented it in the article. There was another thing that she presented, which is really not my experience, you know, again, not just my personal experience, but my experience of talking to people and being involved in various different, both witchcraft and African traditional religious communities for the past 25 plus years, that she sort of collapsed the two. In the sense that if you practiced your spirituality, then you were a witch. Now, you mentioned before, I have initiations in the Lukumi tradition, which most people refer to as Santeria, which is kind of disrespectful, but just so people know what I'm talking about.
Sure. No, I understand.
And there's a lot of, you know, sacred stories and things that are really warnings against witches, which in the same way that, you know, a lot of times the word bruja has a negative connotation. So I think that this is also something that she just sort of glossed over in a way that, you know, it was like, oh, well, you know, it's the same thing and everything's the same thing. And I just didn't agree with that at all. And I think she needed to at least flesh out those points, even if she was accurately representing the individuals who were there. Now, in my article, I did publish statements from one person who had been there, and there were other people that I talked to who had been there that said that she did not do, an, you know, the best job she could have possibly done, you know, both representing herself at the conference and in her communications with the attendees who were there. I did do a follow. I haven't published it yet, but everybody can look for it. It'll be published soon. I did do a follow-up interview with the organizer of the event.
And then, yeah, I know she had done this sort of thing where she was almost collapsing all African traditional spirituality, African traditional religion into Yoruban religion, which was a problem in and of itself.
Yes.
But she also did this thing that I, you know, as somebody who comes from a field at least adjacent to anthropology, I know, and you've probably encountered this in studying anthropology too. There's this longstanding problem of treating cultural study as a thing that happens to those people over there. And the way that she sort of wrote the article made it sound like all of this was happening to people whose spiritual identity was over there or away from where they are now. And I found that to be, you know, troubling. You know, your article kind of got me to look at the article again and see some of those issues. So I appreciate your article doing that. Did you feel like that had happened as well, that she was sort of exoticizing?
Definitely. Oh, it was definitely exoticized. You know, I saw something today that was saying, you know, people need to stop calling people exotic. It's an insult. And I'm like, yes, I definitely do think of that. You know, I understand the term. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying that, you know, there is this kind of way that people have of, you know, this fetishization. Sorry, it's late. I can't talk. Of, you know, this exoticized other, you know, and that's really what it felt like to me. You know, I mean, again, to get back to my point about, you know, having a Black witch or at least a woman of color write the article, you know, I mean, this was an all woman of color event, and it was very clearly stated that it was only going to be attended by women of color. So again, for her to come in and just have these, you know, kind of consumption on a base level of what it was she thought she could get out of them in a few hours was really disrespectful.
Right. Yeah. It's very much, I mean, even, you know, not to over-glorify anthropologists, but even anthropologists will spend a little more time than that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So, and that was one of the best things. The program I did at NYU, we have reunions every, I think it's 5 years, but I went back for this one we had last year, and a friend of mine had done work in the rainforest, and his recent work was going down and actually giving them cameras and getting them to make their own films, and they wanted him to be the evil colonizer who spoke bad Spanish, and they were going to rob him.
So, that's awesome.
I thought this was beautiful. I was like, man, I love you. This is great. You know, so I think that, you know, again, this is one of the reasons that I wanted to be, you know, involved in the discipline, which has, yeah, unfortunately for years been such a haven of, you know, really nastiness towards these people and, you know, practices that I am involved in. So I just thought this was more of that as opposed to more of like, okay, you know, we're going to rob you and film it and laugh at you.
That's true. And now, you know, I think people hear that and they may you know, think that you have a bone to pick, and you certainly, you know, are right to have any bones to pick that you wish. But I think it's also important to point out that you've written a powerful defense of Witch Doctor Utu, who was a guest on our show not too long ago, and he talks a lot about the Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman's connections to African American magical practices. I'm curious, you know, what made you decide to speak on his behalf, and what do you hope people are going to take away from both the Pantheacon debacle and the response to the Atlantic article?
Well, I mean, I hope they're going to take away the fact that, you know, I'm treating people as individuals, you know, and I think that part of what's being lost in the Atlantic article is that it wasn't being treated as people or individuals. And I spoke out on behalf of Utu because I've known him for, you know, a very long time, like, you know, what I think he said 18 years. I don't know. My brain gets fuzzy, but a very long time. And I've worked with him in ritual, and, you know, I've seen him in a lot of different circumstances and situations, and I'm well aware of the work that he's done with the Spirits of the Underground Railroad and with Harriet Tubman. And I was there when he opened the Niagara Voodoo Shrine, which was on the site of the last stop on the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that his heart's in the right place. And I'm not using that as a lame justification for all these people who are going to say that to me. I'm using that as that, you know, there is an element of spirits of place, and there's an element of, you know, honor and respect. And that's how I've seen him conduct himself. And like I said, you know, for all these years. So, and for them to, I spoke out against it because, you know, as a presenter, it's, you can't put somebody on the schedule and take them off and then say the things that they said about him, you know.
I'm not right.
going to go into great detail because he has, but I just don't think that's right. I don't think that's right on any level, you know.
All right. No, absolutely. And from what I understand, the a lot of the people responsible are no longer with Pantheacon because of that. So, and the Atlantic article, one of the other things that it kind of did was, and maybe more on the positive side of things that might have come out of that, was it did talk about magical spirituality being on the rise, both in African-American communities and in other communities as well. And there definitely seems to be a surge of interest, and a lot of people of color seem to be taking the lead in magic and witchcraft. And I'm, you know, kind of thinking here of the hashtag Bruja and the hashtag Witches of Instagram movement, where you have a lot of people like Brie Luna, the Hood Witch, or Chiquita Brujita, as yourself as well. You know, what advice do you think would serve people coming to these communities and the communities of magical practitioners now? What should they do as they proceed? What lessons do you wish you had known back when you got started?
Oh, geez.
And I know that's a big one.
That's a big one. It is a big one. I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy that, you know, we're out of the broom closet, as we used to say. You know, I'm happy that people can say these things and do these things. And I think that's how we're going to ultimately gain acceptance. But that said, you know, I was thinking about writing a piece today called, you know, we're all in the land of the misfit toys, because in a lot of ways, there are a lot of people in, you know, alternative spirituality movements, you know, who are a little questionable. I'm just going to say that. That's the nice way of saying it. But I think that I would have been more cautious. You know what I mean? I think I would have been. I mean, I've seen people do some stuff that was really not sane at all. Let's be honest. You
right.
know, I saw somebody try and channel deity. And then when deity wouldn't leave the person through a transpossession session, they started smacking this person in the face. So that's a bad idea. Invite spirits into yourself and your home, and then you smack them in the face. I don't understand any of this, you know? So I think that a little bit of research, and not on the internet, you know, that's a bad idea. Goes a long way. It definitely does, you know, and see somebody, you know, like I mentioned, you know, I stick up for the people I stick up for, because, you know, I've seen them in a lot of circumstances and I know how they conduct themselves, you know, at least when I'm present, which, you know, in a lot, I always seem to be in the middle of everything, no matter what I do. So I am present for quite a lot of these things. So
I'd say that's more you being in the right place at the right time. I think that's a good thing. Your voice is a good one to have. So
yeah, because, well, I did used to dance for Dr. John. I used to call myself the right place, wrong time girl. So, you know, maybe that's it, you know.
There you go. Oh, that's so cool. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So I just, yeah, it happens. You know what I mean? So somebody could say somebody's wonderful or whatever, you know. But I was at an event where I saw a store owner push a little girl out of the way, getting a blessing because she wanted somebody who'd paid her the money to be at the event for the weekend, you know, not just come in for the blessing part, to get in line first.
Right.
So, you know, come on, you're pushing children out of the way now, lady. You know,
right.
That's not somebody I'm going to trust with my spirituality. That's somebody I'm going to be really, really, really nervous about on every level.
Sure, absolutely. Well, and I mean, and there's always the you know, the ongoing problem of, you know, sort of sexual predation that you find in some of these communities that can be really, really rampant. So something to be careful about, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, I mean, I think, yeah, it's a dangerous, dangerous world, you know, and I got it for speaking out again. See, I speak out from what I see, you know. I always hated Kenny Klein, not to get in that discussion, but I always hated him, not because I knew he was a predator, but because I just hated him. I just always really hated him, and I hated the way he was directly culturally appropriating and being a horrible person, you know, and yeah, nobody would listen. And then when I spoke out after the allegations came out, people said I was just doing it to get publicity.
It's so hard, because I think there's an intentional set of blinders that get dropped down. The magical community is already often kind of such an ostracized place that we don't want to admit when there are bad things among us. And I think that does not serve us very well.
No, so, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Well, so to kind of head towards the ending here on a little bit of a, possibly a lighter note, but I don't know, this may be deep thought too. One of my favorite things that you discuss on your blog is where the intersections of pop culture and really kind of deeply rooted magical traditions are, whether that's, you know, evaluating the new Chilling Adventures of Sabrina series on Netflix, or looking at overlap in magical and spiritual traditions, for example, in Beyoncé's Lemonade and kind of the Black Girl Magic phenomenon. So I'm kind of curious, how do you see pop culture serving magical communities, and, you know, what kind of pitfalls do you think might be there?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can replace A with B, which I think is the first pitfall that a lot of people fall into. And by that, I mean, you know, if we're talking about somebody that's a deity, that's a deity. And that was one of the things I wrote about. You brought up, you know, Beyonce and Oshun. You know, that was one of the things I think is problematic when we look at Beyonce and Oshun. You know, there were all these black witches being so happy that we could see Oshun, but then there were all these other people that were sort of upset about the way she did it and how she did it and all of these other things, you know, not to criticize Queen Bey, because I'm in Brooklyn and I'll get shot. But, I mean, I personally would have liked it if it came with a statement from her about, you know, some of these things and what was happening and stuff like that, you know, and I suppose this, like anything else, is just how we start you know, how we start getting these things more seen and more accepted out there. But I love the intersections of pop culture. I mean, I think it's a lot easier for people to identify with some of our pop culture icons and things like that than, you know, some of these deities that we're looking at, or you know, whatever you want to call them, gods, goddesses, deities, Loa, Orisha. And I think that that's, I always wanted it to be a book, but nobody wants it. I did do a, you know, spiritual lessons from sci-fi. I'm a big sci-fi fan, cosplay, all of that. I'm definitely a blurred. And I think that, you know, look, I got a degree in television studies. I think that the way that these things come into our lives, the way that they're so close to us, in a way it is almost like worship. And I know that sounds like a little crackpotty, but you know, we're looking at them giant. We're looking at them, you know, I got a small TV and it's still larger than life the way I'm looking at some of these images and these people. And that does something to our brains and how we process it and how we, you know, sort of internalize the lessons that we're learning this way, you know. And I don't think it has to be a bad thing, but I think we need to be mindful about it.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And I mean, even if the screens are tiny, you know, the screens that go in our pockets, they're with us always. So, I mean, it's carrying these, for lack of a better term, these gods wherever we go. So sure. It certainly has a powerful effect on us.
It does. Definitely.
So, so I guess, you know, as we head to the end here, what are your future plans? And do you have other projects kind of in your cauldron, so to speak? What are you working on now and what's coming down the line for you?
Well, I have a couple of new books in the work, but I'm not going to make any full announcements yet.
Sure,
but we'll see what happens with that. And then I'm just going to keep, you know, scratching, as my grandfather used to say. You know, there's still a blog. We mentioned it before. You know, there's over 550 posts on there now, I think, you know, so I'm going to keep moving forward. Keep moving forward, making movies. I want to make more of, you know, it's funny. I started out making experimental films and those are the ones that do best. So I'm going to try and go back to doing a little bit more of what I love.
Absolutely. If you ever publish that book on sci-fi spirituality, I'm there in a heartbeat.
All right.
I would read that in a minute. That sounds great. So you got one reader at least. Well, good. Well, thank you so much for being with us tonight, Ms. Dorsey. I appreciate your time and I appreciate your insight on all of these different aspects of magical practice and magical community. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Our immense thanks to Lilith Dorsey for sharing her time and her responses to our questions. I had a fantastic conversation with her. I hope we can get her back on the show again at some point. We hope that you'll check out the work that she's done, both on the Voodoo Universe blog that she has at Patheos and the books that she's written as well. We'll, of course, have links to all that in the show notes. If you have feedback for us on this or any other episode, please feel free to send us a message at compassandkey@gmail.com, or you can just drop by the blog, which is newworldwitchery.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 442-99-WITCH or 442-999-4824. We're on social media. We use Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and of course our YouTube channel where we post a lot of the back episodes, contest announcements, all sorts of stuff. So huge thanks as always to our Patreon supporters. They make the show possible. You can join their ranks for $1 a month or whatever you can afford at patreon.com/newworldwitchery. And if you're in the market for more stuff to listen to after the show is over, you could also check out the link for our Audible promotion, where you can get access to 180,000 titles, including some that I narrate. I actually do a variety of Russian science fiction and weird tales. That's kind of the main thing I've been doing lately, doing those sort of in translation with a specific publishing house. So you can sign up for a free book there with no obligation to continue at audibletrial.com/newworldwitchery. And all that will be in the show notes, too. We'll be back again soon. We'll have more North American folk magic to discuss. But until then, thanks for listening and be well.